You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 79 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Chrome Lakes. Formed in 2013 in the belly of Seattle, Washington, Chrome Lakes approaches their music through the lens of post-hardcore in the year of post-truth America. Their sound, shaped from the influences of Seattle's community and America's emo and post-hardcore landscapes, offers an aggressive yet melodic entry into the schism of indie rock, moving past the last decade's worth of Seattle folk. For more information on Chrome Lakes, you can check out chromelakes.bandcamp.com, Facebook at Chrome Lakes, and on Instagram at chrome_lakes. Now here it is, their new single, Amplified.
Deep Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hey, this is Buzz from the Melvins. You're listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the road, 'cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the van, 'cause tomorrow we'll do it. We'll do it.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, what's going on? As always, this is Chris Swinney, your host for That One Time on Tour. This is my podcast where I get to sit down with somebody in or around the entertainment industry and have an awesome conversation. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you so much. Our guest today, King Buzzo from the Almighty Melvins, is on the program. So if King Buzzo brought you here, hopefully you guys enjoy it. And you got to go back. We've got 78 other episodes for you to check out. For everybody that checked out last week's episode with R&B soul singer Alan Stone, thank you very, very much. I had a blast talking with Alan. His new record, Building Balance, is out now. Go ahead and stream it or order the vinyl. Do whatever you want. Alan's a great guy, and we support him here at the program. Like I said, today on the program, we have King Buzzo, Buzz Osborne, singer, songwriter, guitarist, all-around cool dude from the Melvins. I got to go down to the Melvins show about a month or so ago in Indianapolis and hang out with Buzz, and it was a lot of fun. This interview is a little different than some of the other interviews. Buzz kind of keeps me on my toes, and I really enjoyed it. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it as well. But before we get to my conversation, as always, we have some awesome companies that help us keep the lights on here at That One Time on Tour. I need to tell you guys about the Merch Planet, themerchplanet.com. They're an amazing company that does merchandise for your band, family reunion, whatever you need. They've got you covered. Go on over to themerchplanet.com, and when you order all your stuff and you're checking out, use the promo code TOTOTFREE. That is TOTOTFREE, and you're going to get free shipping on anything that you order. And if you're a band on the road and you're drop shipping stuff to venues, that is an awesome deal to get free shipping. So head on over to themerchplanet.com. And I just want to say thank you guys so much for supporting us here at TOTOT. We really appreciate it. Our other sponsor for this week, as always, they're back. Permanence Tattoo Gallery over in Anderson, Indiana. My buddy and past guest of the show, Jacob Harrison, is the owner. And it is an amazing shop right here in East Central Indiana. If you guys are not local, no big deal. Next time you're in this area, go get tattooed at Permanence Tattoo Gallery. Tell them that I sent you. Maybe they'll hook you up with a good deal. They're an awesome place, and they've got so many great artists, and it's just, you feel very comfortable. I've been in tattoo shops before where maybe I didn't feel the most comfortable, but when I'm in there, it's like family. I love that place. So check it out. They're on all of the social media outlets at Permanence Tattoo Gallery. Okay, so that is it. Also, don't forget, though, Chrome Lakes at the beginning of the episode. Awesome band out of Seattle. Check them out at chromelakes.bandcamp.com. They have a new record coming out. We debuted their new single, Amplified, so go and check it out, man. Okay, so before we get to my conversation with Buzz, I've been toying with this idea of doing like a tribute episode to Tony Sly from No Use for a Name. If you guys out there listening don't know who Tony is, Tony was the singer, songwriter, guitarist for this band that I love, No Use for a Name, out of California, and he died a few years back, and they've done like tribute albums and all kinds of things for that, And I thought about maybe doing a tribute episode, trying to get some people that knew Tony to speak on the show. And the funny thing is that I've talked about paranormal stuff on this show before, and I've talked about my love for No Use for a Name. Well, one of my listeners, Andy from Wisconsin, sent me an email, and he's got something that combines the two. He has a No Use for a Name ghost story. So Andy over in Wisconsin, I'm going to go ahead and read his story and see if you guys like it. So Andy says, back in 2005, while going with my brother to the No Use for a Name concert because he was interviewing Matt Riddle, the bass player for No Use for a Name, they were invited to go ghost hunting with the band in the haunted pool of the Rave in Milwaukee, which is a great venue. And I've heard the stories about the pool there at the Rave being haunted. But so they were invited to go ghost hunting in the haunted pool of the Rave in Milwaukee, which has a rich history of ghosts and paranormal. While walking around the basement, they got to the pool, which was freezing cold in the middle of summer, which is kind of weird. While they walked inside the pool, he was peeking through a porthole, I guess kind of like a ship, but they have those there at the pool, inside the pool, and he swears he saw a girl standing in the deep end of the pool, literally froze him in his tracks. When they left, he looked back, and the pool was completely empty, and she was gone. He says it still gives him goosebumps to this day. So, Andy, I want to thank you very much for your story about ghost hunting with No Use for a Name. Maybe if I can get Rory or Matt or somebody on here, maybe they'll remember ghost hunting with you at the Rave in Milwaukee. If you guys have a story that includes one of your favorite bands and the paranormal, maybe that'll be a new segment on the show. I don't know. So send them in. You can hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit me up on all the socials. It's just @TOTOTpodcast. And yeah, that was a really cool story, man. I'd like to go ghost hunting with like Metallica. That would be cool. Or ghost hunting with Silverchair. I'm just trying to think of all my favorite bands. Ghost hunting with Hot Water Music. Maybe if I get Chuck on the show, maybe we can talk about ghost hunting. But Andy, thank you so much for sending in your story. If you guys want to be featured on an episode, send me anything. I feature all kinds of crazy stuff, stories, or, you know, you can call the hotline. It's 1-765-372-8818, and you can just leave me a voicemail. Maybe I'll play it on the show. But I'm going to stop babbling. I don't have any other segments or anything today, and I want to get right into this interview. But if you guys want to help out the show, head on over to patreon.com/TOTOT podcast. Get involved at the $5 level. It goes a long way to help us, and you'll gain access to exclusive patron-only bonus episodes and all kinds of other cool goodies like contests, and it's a great place, so check it out. If you don't want to get involved financially helping the show, that's completely cool. I understand that. Just please go to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you go, leave us a review and a 5-star rating. That would be awesome. That helps us gain visibility and everybody can find the show. And that's it. Oh, subscribing. That really helps as well if you subscribe wherever you listen. But that's my spiel for today. So I'm going to get into my conversation. I had such a good time talking to Buzz. He's a very unique individual. And like I said, he kept me on my toes. So I hope you guys enjoy this. This is my conversation with King Buzzo from the Melvins. Here we go. And I'm sitting here with King Buzzo.
Yes.
Buzz from the Melvins in Indianapolis. How are you doing today, Buzz?
Well, it's hotter than I like, but...
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's almost October. It's normally not this hot.
Don't worry. It'll get cold.
Yeah, of course, right?
It's coming.
It's coming. So how is the tour going? I know you guys, you work your asses off all the time. You're always on tour, always doing something. I know you've been on the road for a while now. You were just in Minneapolis, some other places. How has it been for you guys?
Good. Tonight's 22 out of 53.
That's pretty crazy.
So
I know that you guys at one point did a tour where you'd, and unless this is false, because I did watch your Wikipedia fact or false interview in preparation.
I don't remember what I said in that.
A lot of Wikipedia was
could
false.
Could be false.
But I read that you guys did a tour one time, 51 days straight, all 50 states, starting in Alaska, ending
plus
in Hawaii.
Plus D.C.
Yeah, plus D.C. for the 51.
Yeah, we did that, yes.
Was that, I mean, that's insane. That's, you're probably one of the few bands that have played every state as well.
Oh, I don't know about that, but we certainly are the only band that's ever done it
In one fell swoop.
Yeah. Some guys have done it on acoustic guitar, but that doesn't really count.
So you guys did full band, full everything.
Yep.
Melvin's light
with stand-up bass, the whole works.
So it was a lot of driving, though, I take it, right? I mean, when you get to the East Coast, I guess it's not as bad, but...
Well, if you're only concerned about the state...
I guess, yeah.
Not necessarily the best show.
So we're some of the, like,
of a deal.
Some smaller markets, I take it, maybe, for some of the states.
I think we played Allentown and some other places like that.
Was it Crocodile Rock in Allentown? You ever played there?
I think that's where it was, I believe.
We both were in a band together. We've played there as well. But
it's the only time I've ever been there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I played a lot else out that way. Allentown, though, it's a good little town. What do you think?
What now?
Allentown's a good little town. What do you think of Indianapolis?
I'll take your word for it.
Well, I mean, didn't Billy Joel write a song about it?
Well, we won't hold that against Allentown.
I'm pretty sure that he did. So what do you think of Indianapolis? I'm sure you guys have been playing here forever.
Yeah, we've played here a lot of times. It's fine. I mean, if you drop me in downtown anywhere in the Midwest, it looks about the same to me.
Yeah, true, right?
I mean, it's not like I'm going to be standing on stage and going, wow, I'm in Indianapolis.
Well, I mean, after 36 years of being a band, are there any places that make you kind of feel that way?
Not while I'm playing.
Not where you're playing.
No, I'll play the same show tonight that I will in Brooklyn or Berlin or
yeah,
Buenos Aires, the same exact.
I know that you guys...
We don't do anything like, you know, oh, well, tonight doesn't matter. Never. I'll never do that. So I can't do that.
You give 100% every night, no matter what?
Do my best every single night. Doesn't matter where it is.
That's awesome.
Trying to honor what we're doing.
And you guys, I know that you guys were in Christchurch, New Zealand when they had the big earthquake, and then a while later you guys were in Japan when they had the earthquake.
Now they started the music. Can you still hear me fine?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay.
So what was it like? I had some friends that were in Hawaii on tour when they had that big missile scare.
Oh yeah, yeah.
What was the whole vibe like when you guys were in New Zealand and Japan when all that happened?
Oh, the New Zealand one was horrible because the guy we were with, the promoter guy, was no help whatsoever.
Really?
No. We figured out how to get out of there, what to do, without any help from him.
So he just, like, left you guys high and dry.
He was there, but he just wasn't doing anything. I realized if we don't do something, we're not going to get out of here. So
did you guys have shows still past the time of the earthquake and you got out of there, or was it...
We had a show in Wellington and a show in back in Auckland. I can't remember if we did the Wellington one. I think we had to cancel that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's no way to get there.
Yeah. You know? And then when you guys were in Japan, it seems like maybe you had a streak of bad luck because then they had the...
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later, they had the earthquake and the tsunami. Was there still like a crazy, chaotic vibe when that happened as well?
Oh, it was worse.
It was worse.
In New Zealand, the club that we played was destroyed. And the hotel we had just checked out of was destroyed.
That's insane.
We were at the airport. And they had just had earthquake a couple of months before that, a big one.
And you live on the West Coast, so I'm sure
you've been to earthquakes there too.
Yeah, you're no stranger to earthquakes, but it's got to be kind of scary. My friends that were in Hawaii when they had that text message missile alert, they thought they were going to die.
Text message missile alert?
You don't remember that a couple months ago?
They thought they were going to die?
Well, yeah, there was a test for all the phone companies that send out alerts for nuclear weapons, and for some reason it went off and like 8 million Americans got a text message that said incoming nuclear missile threat from North Korea or whatever. And they were in Hawaii and it was supposed to be hitting Hawaii according to the text message. And it was all fake. None of it was real.
Yeah.
But they thought they were going to die. They went out to the beach and they signed off, man. They thought it was going to be over.
Nobody's going to get off that easy. Right. No way. We're here for the duration. That's it.
So with being a band as long as you guys have been, I know there's a lot of, you know, former members, but there's been the core unit of you and Dale for a really long time, since the beginning. You guys went
almost the beginning.
And you guys went to high school together. I mean,
no.
You didn't go to, see, fact no. or fake, there it is.
We never went to high school together, no. But me you guys and Dale did not.
You've known each other for a long time.
I'm 4 years older than him.
Okay. So yeah, that makes sense.
And we didn't even live in the same town, so. I lived in a much smaller town.
And that's in Washington?
Yeah, on the coast.
So what were you listening to back in the day as far as, like, you know, inspirational stuff that made you want to pursue music? What are some of your influences from your childhood musically?
Well, I didn't start playing guitar until I was about 17 or 18.
Okay.
And so within a couple of years, we were a band. So it seemed like a lot longer of a time then. than it actually ended up being.
Okay.
But I got interested in weirder music. There was nothing like that where I lived. You couldn't buy a record. You couldn't do anything. And I got interested in that stuff simply by how those bands looked in Cream magazine. Cream, Hit Parader, stuff like that. Circus, Trouser Press. And then I would order those records simply on the way they looked. Bands like The Clash, The Sex Pistols. In the 70s, when I was like 12. So, and from all that, it just kind of branched out into what I ended up, you know, everything else that I did. So, but I didn't have anybody teach me anything. I didn't have one person, you know, back then in the 70s tell me anything about music. I didn't have any older brothers or sisters.
Was guitar the first thing that you started playing, instrument-wise?
Yeah, there's no music in my family at all, whatsoever. Yeah, it was the first thing. I never played music before that. No, not really.
Did you take any formal lessons, or was it all just kind of...
Nope, no lessons. Don't read music. I have an odd way of counting everything. That's not...
Can you give me an example, maybe, of how you count the stuff?
No, it makes sense to me, but Dale's always like, that's not where the one is, but yeah. That's where your one is. So he's good at interpreting it. It's odd. Relatively quickly after doing starting the Melvins... I started writing music in this really strange, odd timings.
Okay.
That hasn't stopped.
And I guess if you don't, you know, learn the traditional way, that's probably a little bit easier. You think of it in different terms, like you said, the way that you count, right?
Well, I never had an easy time with it. I mean, it was still odd, but it felt better to me. And when I'm writing my own music, I'll use 4/4 a little bit, but... it sounds corny to me.
Yeah.
And I try to branch out of the traditional songwriting structure.
What is, like, when you go to write songs, are you on a couch with an acoustic guitar? Do you have full stack going? Like, what's your, when you write riffs on the guitar, how is it normally for you?
It's always just playing by myself, not loud. It doesn't really matter what kind of guitar.
Yeah.
A lot of it's electric playing acoustically, or, and these days, since the advent of the iPhone, then I'll just record riffs on my phone.
You do like the voice memo on your phone?
Yeah. That kind of thing. And then work them out more, but just to remember the riff.
So you're not using any kind of like GarageBand or Logic or anything?
I have all that stuff, but I never use it. Yeah. We have a studio now with Toshi, who's doing the noise thing.
Yeah.
We have a studio with him in LA.
Okay.
And we've been working with him since 2001.
Okay, cool.
I think. And in the last 6 years, we built a rehearsal play studio that he also records other bands there. So I don't really need to, you know, demos are a pointless waste of time. Yeah. You know, just bring them in and then we record it really quickly.
So with being a band that has the output that you guys have had, I mean, it seems like you guys are always putting something new out, doing different projects. Is there a process you go through with picking a set list for a tour? Like what stays, what goes? Like, can you take me through that process a little bit?
Well, we play the same set every night, not unlike a Broadway musical.
Okay.
They don't change their set around. Nobody bitches.
Yeah, right. Do you ever get any shit from people that like wanted you to play one of their favorite songs, but of course it wasn't in the set that night?
Just say we can't play them all.
Yeah, you can't play them all, right?
We've recorded north of 500 songs.
That's crazy, man.
So it's obviously something's going to get left out. And I think it's ridiculous for bands to play more than about an hour.
Yeah.
I would honestly rather play a good solid 40 minutes. People will get a better show.
Yeah.
When I go to a show...
There's no filler that way, too, at all. No filler.
Not gas. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's debatable. Yeah. People can, you know, there's no accounting for taste.
Yeah.
I mean, but when I go to a show, I'm good after that. But I'm a lot older than some of the kids. So, but if you haven't convinced an audience after 40 minutes, you're not going to convince them after another 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
After being a band as long as you guys have been, do you notice at the shows sometimes there's like dads with their kids, like more than one generation that might have been listening to you for a long time? Like, do you
not feel, often?
Not often?
No. You see, kids that would be into our band don't want to listen, don't want to hang out with their dads. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I never thought of that. You probably don't like your parents.
I always wonder what's going on there. Yeah. Okay. I never went to rock shows with my parents. They never took me to anything like that.
So your most recent record.
Plus, I wanted to be on acid. So, yeah. How would that work out with your dad?
I mean, if you have a dad that likes acid too, I don't know. There's probably some.
Yeah, that
some
seems
in
a little weird to me too. You know? That would probably push me towards being a fundamental Christian. You know?
I always thought it was weird. This is off the subject, but I always thought it was weird growing up. I had friends' parents that would like smoke weed or drink with their kids. Like, I don't know. I just always thought that was so strange. I didn't want my parents to do that, but I had friends that, I get high with my dad. I'm like, I don't know.
I didn't think it was any of my parents' business what I was doing.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't want to do anything like that because I didn't want them to be able to use that against me.
There you go.
You know, well, you were drunk or you were on drugs. No, as far as you know, I wasn't.
Did you have like a pretty normal upbringing? Like, were your parents, did they support the music
compared
aspirations?
To what?
Well, I mean, I know it's a loaded question, but like the your musical aspirations when you were young, did you want it to be a career or was it just something that you really liked doing?
That seemed absurd.
Yeah.
The idea of playing music for a living was, no, that was absurd. Making a record, it seemed absurd. I mean, we thought it'd be cool to play a show. That's it, really. I mean, it wasn't, we're going to do this. We're going to make 30 albums. And no, that's crazy. And my parents were not supportive. Not at all. They were counterproductive. They looked at it as nothing more than a total waste of time. And made sure I understood that.
Was there ever a glimmer, like, you know, when you guys got a little bit bigger and you were doing bigger tours, like, did they ever say,
them?
Yeah.
No, it's a total mystery to them.
Oh, okay.
You know, the fact that I'm not getting underwritten by somebody else, actually making it work. Because it's not their world.
Yeah.
And so they don't have any faith in it. I don't know what they expected. I mean, they didn't. I mean, even like as late as getting signed to Atlantic Records, they didn't believe it.
Yeah.
They just didn't believe it.
Because, I mean, that's kind of a big deal for parents.
My dad actually said, I'd have to see the contract before I believe you actually got signed to Atlantic. I don't think until the day of the record, if they saw the record, because I never send them records or anything, but if they saw it with the Atlantic, I think that's the only way they really believed it was true.
And they never like saw you on MTV or 120 Minutes?
We were never really on. We were on that little, but we were never MTV people. I mean, too weird and ugly.
I remember seeing you guys with Matt Pinfield, though.
I
remember seeing you guys with Matt Pinfield on 120 Minutes.
Matt Pinfield? I don't know.
He was like the guy that hosted 120 Minutes. He always interviewed all the bands, kind of bald.
Yeah, you know, I never watched watched MTV.
See, growing up in the Midwest, that's where we got our culture, man. When I was like 12, 13 years old, like if we wanted cool bands, we had to stay up late on Sunday and watch that show.
Well, if I was going to do... When I left my parents' house is when I pretty much quit watching television.
Okay.
Early 80s. And when watching TV at my house required being in the same room with your parents for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And if you were around them long enough, something bad was going to happen.
Yeah.
So why would you do it? So I missed out on all that stuff. I didn't have anything to do with all the cultural icons that most people do. I just don't know. I don't know them. You know, and so then I just never watched TV after that.
Watch any now? Like when people tell you, like, "Oh, Breaking Bad's really cool." Like, do you have like stuff that you watch now?
I have little patience for it.
Yeah,
I didn't like Breaking Bad. I thought it was okay, but me and my wife will watch. We don't have cable or anything. We'll watch Netflix or something like that. But I just fall asleep.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad, I thought was, I don't know, it's too made for TV for me.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, everything's going bad, and they're all going to be killed, and they somehow get out of it. I'd rather be watching the Rockford Files from 1970.
I think it's
way better. But I'm really picky when it comes to that kind of stuff, usually because I'm a really big movie buff.
Okay.
And so I don't have much faith, or I don't have much patience for it.
What's your favorite genre of movie?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, what do you enjoy, though? Do you like horror? Do you like...
I would say yes to all genres.
Oh, really?
It just has to be good.
Movie buff in general, as long as it's good. Hmm?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of John Huston's work.
Okay.
Favorite movie is Treasure Sierra Madre. I think that people that disagree with that, I don't know what they're looking for in a movie. And I don't know what it is they're seeing when they go to a movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't know. I don't understand people that don't like movies that are in black and white. I don't understand that. How could you write off a movie because it wasn't in color? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there were good ideas before color TV came around.
It's like there's people that take great pictures color, and they take great pictures black and white. Yeah. Would you say Diane Arbus is not a good photographer because she only took black and white photos? That's insanity. Or Larry Clark, or, you know.
Do you enjoy comedy?
I enjoy anything that's good.
Do you have any comedians that you enjoy on a regular basis?
I thought you meant comedy movies.
Well, yeah, comedy movies, but do you have any comedians, stand-up or otherwise, that you enjoy on a
comedians
regular basis?
Comedians I don't have much patience for either.
Yeah.
I mostly think they're not funny. Yeah. I liked some of Sam Kinison stuff. I like Pryor. Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, yeah.
George Carlin. Lenny Bruce is probably my favorite. He fought a lot of battles that I don't think he's given credit for.
What did you think of Andy Kaufman back in the day?
I liked it.
I think it's great.
Situational comedy like that.
I meet people, I always kind of judge them. I'm like, what do you think of Andy Kaufman? And if they don't like him, I'm like, well, you just don't get it. You just don't understand it, you know?
You know, I'm not really a here's another little joke for you type of guy.
Or yeah, yeah, yeah.
Social commentary. It's like, yeah, what do you know, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes from like some millionaire. It's like, I can't learn anything from you.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
If I offered you $2 million to work for 2 months, you'd tell me to get fucked. What could I learn from you? Nothing.
So I want to get back on track here just because I'm interested. The most recent record, Pincus Abortion Technician, it came out last year. This is still pretty much the touring cycle for that record. Are you guys working on anything new currently? Do you ride on the road?
Well, we don't really have touring cycles. I mean, at this point, for like the last, I'd say, 20 years... We are touring to sell all of our records.
Okay, yeah.
It's like we don't. And I quit viewing them in that capacity because we work so much.
Yeah.
So it's like, what? I have never occurred to me to go, oh, we got to go out and promote this record. Records don't sell.
Yeah.
And so not in any major, huge amount. The whole idea that... Now bands don't get paid. No, bands never got paid.
Yeah.
When was this golden era when these check-writing angels were writing checks to bands, you know? That's just crazy. I never understood how people complained about major labels when there was indie labels to complain about. They're the biggest ripoffs of all.
Yeah.
They just won't ever pay you anything. Nothing. And that certainly continues.
Oh, definitely. I mean...
Nothing's changed for bands.
The streaming, like, I just saw today, like, I have a lot of friends who have... 100 million streams on Spotify and they make $5,000. I mean, I just don't understand. The guy that owns Spotify is worth $3 billion and nobody's getting... I feel like bands should get a little bit more than they're getting right now.
How exactly would you split that up?
I mean, I don't know.
That's the thing. Because what they do is they divide it up by how many streams you have.
Yeah.
So it's actually the fairest way it can happen because people aren't paying shit for the service.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm on Spotify right now and I'm paying like $5 a month.
Okay, $5 a month, there's no money.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they do.
Hey, this is Chris from That One Time on Tour. Odds are, if you're listening to this, you're in a band or know someone who is. One of the biggest problems facing bands is finding affordable, high-quality merchandise. Well, not anymore. The Merch Planet offers soft, high-end quality shirts starting at as little as $6 a piece. And right now, they're offering free shipping to all TOTOT listeners. They have lightning-fast turnarounds and ship everywhere throughout the U.S. and Canada. Head on over to themerchplanet.com and use the promo code TOTOTFREE at checkout. You'll be glad you did.
You know, how can you paying $5 amount to bands making more money?
Yeah. It's weird that the CEO somehow has made that much money, but I guess there's ads.
He's running a big company.
Yeah.
And if you're not parting it up in a way that is equal to how much you are actually getting listened to,
yeah,
then it would just be charity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't stream stuff personally. Doesn't mean I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I think my wife does, but I personally would rather own it.
I mean, I love having a physical copy of something.
I do. I don't trust them.
CD or vinyl or whatever.
CD's my favorite.
As long as it's something I can hold in my hand and So are you, you said you like CDs.
Yeah, personally. It's my favorite sounding.
See, that's how I feel as well, because people always tell me, and this is an unpopular thing to say, people are so into vinyl, and I love vinyl, I collect vinyl, but people that tell me vinyl sounds better than CD, I'm like, well, you can like vinyl better, but I don't think it sounds better than CD.
It doesn't sound better.
Yeah.
But if you want to listen to vinyl, who am I to tell you you're wrong?
No, yeah, totally.
If you want to listen to crappy sounding MP3s, that's your business.
Compressed as hell
MP3s. I don't know. I mean, it's like Steven, bass player, always laughs about it. He goes, if you'd have told me 20 years ago that in the future, or like in the early 80s, in the future, people are going to listen to music on these little tiny computer speakers.
Yeah.
And you'd go, oh, really? Because they're going to sound really rad. No, no, they sound like shit. But that's what people want to listen to it on.
You know, yeah.
So. Yeah, they mix it. Yeah, I mean, so nobody would have guessed that.
Yeah.
They'd have thought you'd think it would be more hi-fi, not less. It's way. They're listening to the worst way you can listen to music now than worse than ever.
I just feel like everything's getting taken away because there's no cassettes. There's no CDs. I used to buy MP3s, and I felt like I still owned something because it was on my hard drive. But now you can hardly, you can still do that, but it's going all to these streaming sites. And if I want that, I feel like I still want to own something in my hand. And I love the artwork. I mean, you guys always have killer artwork.
Yeah. Yeah, well, live with a married to a graphic designer, so it's hard not to.
Yeah. And I mean, I found out about some of my favorite bands by reading the thank yous and the liner notes of all the bands that I liked when I was young. And I don't think kids still do that.
I don't know what kids do. I never knew what kids did when I was a kid. I never liked kids, even when I was a teenager. And they always irritated me. I never got along with them. Why would I get along with them now? I don't understand them. Never did. So nothing's changed.
Is there anything?
I'm not a. Go ahead.
Was there anything out now that piques your interest musically?
Oh, lots of stuff, but about as many as ever did.
Yeah.
I don't think that there was ever a golden era of music when I liked every single thing that came out. On the contrary, you know. I mean, if you look at, like, do a search for the top 10 of some week, like 1973, it's all people you never heard of.
Yeah.
No idea who they are. So the, you know, Led Zeppelin 3 or whatever came out, you know, the fourth album, whatever came out around that time, whenever, that you'd think that everybody was into. Well, they were some, but most of it was garbage.
Yeah.
Like now.
Yeah.
Most of it's garbage.
Same as ever. If I was to raid your CD collection on tour or at home, what do you listen to on a regular basis?
It's a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to make a playlist, it's going to probably have about 50 bands on it.
Okay.
Different bands. Today on the way here, we listened to the live Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall album.
Okay.
Which is one of my favorites. I listen to lots of Tom Waits, as well as lots of heavy metal and everything in between. You know? Lots of different kinds of things.
Are you a Metallica fan at all? I mean, I'm sure you've probably met those guys over the years.
Slightly. I'm not good at networking.
Yeah.
I've never been good at it. Like hanging out. Let's go to the beat. It's like, do you want to do this? No.
What are some of your heavy metal bands that you like?
Oh, I think Judas Priest, Unleashed in the East is the best heavy metal album ever made.
Awesome.
Personally, you know, I don't think that anybody's ever topped that record.
Have you heard, this isn't really, I guess, heavy metal, this is different, but I know you have a relationship with the guys in Tool. Have you heard the new record?
Have I heard it?
Yeah, have you heard the new one?
My wife did the cover, so I've been familiar with it for a long time.
Then, yeah. It's really good.
Adam's been playing me junk off that record that they're working on for years.
13 years, something like that. That's crazy, man.
Demos and all kinds of stuff. So,
the new record, Pincus Abortion Technician, did you guys self-produce that? Did you guys work with
producer? We worked with Toshi.
Oh, you worked with
Toshi Kasai. Yeah, that's okay. What I said. We've been working with him since 2001.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, and we have a studio with him in L.A.
And so everything was done there. Did you guys do a lot of pre-production with him as well?
What is pre-production?
I don't know. You know, messing with the songs before you go in.
No, that's where we rehearse. We're always in the studio.
So it's all pretty much pre-production. Yeah.
So it's like you're rehearsing and it's like, oh, that sounds pretty good. Let's lay it down. Lay down the drums. You know, you have it.
Yeah.
So lay it down, then listen to it and decide what you're going to do. And most of the time that stuff goes on there, right in the record.
What kind of, are you like a vintage amp guy or
no.
Do you like any of the modeling stuff?
No modeling. That stuff all sounds like crap to me, most of it. I'm sure I could probably, if I messed around with it long enough, get it to sound all right. But, you know, I'm not a vintage guy.
Yeah.
You think about guys like Hendrix or people like that, they were using new gear.
Yeah.
Brand new.
Do you really kind of, you know, painstakingly go over the gear you're using in the studio to
tone?
Do you go over the gear a lot in the studio to get your tones, or are you a plug and play kind of guy? Like, that sounds good, let's just go with that.
Oh no, I have a guitar rack that holds like six guitars and I rotate guitars through it. And then a lot of times what I'll do is if I'm working on a song, I'll do, you know, look, it's rock sounding to some degree. And I'll do a basic track of it. And then if I want to double it, I'll do it with a different guitar. Instead of changing the amp, play the same amp with a different guitar.
Different pickup setup, everything like that. Yeah.
Every guitar sounds different.
Yeah.
And so you can leave it in the exact same settings and change guitars and it sounds way different. So we've done so much of that kind of stuff. I couldn't even tell you, you know, like with any real accuracy, especially lately, what exactly we did on a lot of those records. What's funny is like people go, oh, you're using those aluminum guitars now. I go, well, some of them have some aluminum in them, but they're wood, but I have some aluminum, all aluminum guitars. And they go, well, your guitar sound was a lot better, like on the Stoner Witch record. I'm like, oh, yeah, what song? Like, well, the Les Paul, you know, the Les Paul. I go, well, what song? Like, a Revolve. I go, Revolve was a, think back, I go, it was a Jackson and a Mustang for the main part of the song. And then the solo was played on a Fender Stratocaster. So you don't even know what you're talking about.
They have this idea in their mind. Using,
this is fucking crazy. It's like, that's just so absurd. Yeah. Like, you don't know what I was using. I remember it because the engineer had a Jackson in the studio, and I go, let me try that thing. And I thought it played pretty good. I don't think I would have bought one, but it played good, and I thought I was messing around with it and tried the rhythm track on that and then doubled it with a Mustang. Just a stock reissue Mustang from the early 90s.
Yeah.
Sounded great. Both those together, really great. And then the solo was played on a Strat. So there's no Les Paul on it. But people, your sound with the Les Paul. And so that's how all of our records are. There's no... I did a record, just to prove a point. The Nude with Boots record, where I used my 1972 Les Paul, the first one I ever had. I used it for every single thing on the record. Every overdub. I never changed guitars. No one said a fucking word about it. Not a word. Like, wow, that record sounds so much better. No, they didn't say a word. I used a Les Paul on every single song for every single part of every single song. The same guitar.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice? No. Did they say one word? No. Nothing. They're crazy. They're hearing things that aren't there. They're listening with their eyes. Which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
at this point, we could go into the studio with almost any gear and make it work.
Yeah. Does it freak you out sometimes that people kind of hold you guys that near and dear and they feel like it's kind of, they have ownership in it, so then they come up with the crazy theories like you use?
They always know best.
Yeah.
Here's what you should be doing. Really? Let me write that down. I'll put it in my locker. Yeah. If I listened to guys that were telling me what I should be doing, I wouldn't be doing anything.
That's true, man.
You know, I mean, especially a long time ago when nobody cared about us at all.
Yeah.
If I wouldn't have stuck to my guns, I would have quit. Or we certainly wouldn't have done what we ended up doing.
Yeah.
You know, I got to where I was by not listening to people.
Yeah. Well, hey, I tell you what, man, we're getting close to the half hour. I don't want to take all your time. I do have a couple listener questions.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind answering them.
No, I don't mind.
Okay. Josh from California. He wants to know if there's any plans for another solo record in the future.
Yeah, I'm working on it right now.
Okay, cool.
Me and Trevor Dunn, acoustic guitar, and stand-up bass.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to finish the vocals on it. It'll be done.
And he's the guy that did the Melvin's Light stuff with you guys,
and he also was in Phantomos with me.
Okay,
and cool. And he plays a Mr. Bungle.
And I wanted to actually, before I get to this last question, you guys are opening up one of the reunion shows in February for Mr. Bungle,
in New York,
right?
In L.A., is the third of three.
Any more Phantomas stuff ever?
Not on the horizon.
Not on the horizon.
I have no reason to believe it'll happen.
I'm a big fan. I just thought I'd ask that. But
No. I'm fine with that. But it's Mike's deal, that is. And I have little or nothing to do with whether what we do or when we do it.
Okay, cool. Well, I've got one more question for you. This is from Ollie from Croatia.
Croatia?
Yeah, Ollie. No. Ollie from Croatia said, how did you become friends with the guys from Tool?
Let me think. They asked us to play with them. That was in 97.
You guys did like Australia or something with them.
No, right? No, that was after that.
Okay, okay.
97, we toured with them. We did some shows with them on the East. Like, they just asked us to open. That's how I became friends with them. So,
I remember
22 years ago.
When I was young, I remember seeing on their website, there was a picture of you guys and, like, spelled out in cold meat. It said, like, Tool sucks.
Oh, that was way later. that was years later.
Okay, cool.
Melvin
say Tool sucks. Well, Ollie,
we certainly do.
Thank you so much for your question. Buzz, I can't wait to see you guys tonight.
Oh, we'll do our best.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
For the interest.
And I appreciate
it. Thank you for the interest. I really appreciate it.
So there it was, my conversation with King Buzzo from the Melvins. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was so much fun. My buddy Eric Johnson from the band Brazil, he's been on the show a couple times. We got to go down to the Vogue in Indianapolis and hang out with Buzz and all the guys from the Melvins. And it was so much fun. Red Cross opened up the show. And I love doing these in-person live things a lot. And I hope there's going to be a lot more in the future. So thank you guys very much. Like I said, if Buzz brought you here, this is your first time listening. We have 78 other episodes in the archive. So go dig around, see if you can find anything that interests you. I'd really appreciate it. And maybe hit that subscribe button. That would be cool. Because then you could check out next week's episode before anybody else, with my buddy Russ Rankin, singer for Good Riddance, amazing Fat Records band out of California. They've been one of my favorite bands for quite a while. I love everything about Good Riddance, the music, the message, everything. So you guys need to come back next week for my conversation with Russ from Good Riddance. It's a good one. We talk about all kinds of stuff, including hockey. So if any of you guys are hockey fans out there, you'll like to come back for next week's episode. So if you guys want to sponsor an episode, if you have a band like Chrome Lakes at the beginning of this episode, or a company like the Merch Planet or Permanence Tattoo Gallery, hit me up and we will figure it out. TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. It only takes a second. Hit me up and we will make it happen, man. Also, you guys need to please go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify or wherever you listen and subscribe, rate, and review, preferably 5 stars. It helps us get recognized by everybody that likes this kind of podcast, and it'll help everybody find us, and we'll take over the world together. So thank you once again for coming back if you did, or if this is your first time, welcome to the podcast. I'm going to get out of here. It's late and I'm tired, but I'm going to play a cool song by the Melvins. Their latest record, Pincus Abortion Technician, came out last year in April. And there's so many good songs on the record, but I've been addicted to their cover. It's a kind of a reimagination, actually, of I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles. It's really cool with like the melody choices that they make and just how they changed it. So it still has that Beatles feel, and it's still got the hook and all the melodies, but it's changed to where it is a Melvin song now. So I hope you guys are going to enjoy this. Like I said, come back next week for Russ from Good Riddance. As always, this is Chris Swinney, and I'm going to get out of here. Here's the Melvins with I Want to Hold Your Hand. Peace! We'll be right back.
number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolates.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.